All right, we're in. Happy Thursday, everybody. Javier Haas, Elliot Lane, here to bring you two amazing executives today. We're going to talk people in cannabis. We're going to talk cannabis tech and software, ancillary plays. It's going to be a lot of fun. Javi, I don't know if you saw the interview yesterday with Shad Dales on Benzinga's channel with Dan Ahrens. I'll tell you about it when we come back, but man. Dan Ahrens is putting some predictions.
I gotta shout out your t-shirt. You gotta show that what you're wearing. It's the
Mission Green CB1 Capital.
Harrison.
Woo. Oh, I can't. My left and rights are difficult. So I'm wearing a t-shirt with a US flag and a cannabis leaf. Technically illegal, but we do what we do. All right, y'all, let's get to it. Malia, let's roll credits. All right. Cannabis Insider, one of the last. I mean, you got like about 8 more episodes as it stands for Javi and I before we shift it up a bit for 2024. We're going to roll out a whole new concept for this channel moving into the new year. I'm incredibly excited about it. You may see some on-site content. You may see some original content, some more product content that I know Javi's pumped about. Different interviews with leaders, as well as up-and-comers. But today, we're going to stick to what we do best and bring in two cool new executives. But before that, Javi teased it in the opening here. Dan Ahrens got on the Trade to Black podcast, which happens on Benzinga's channel, but hosted by the Dales Report guys. He gets on and basically says, listen, I wouldn't be shocked. There's a little birdie telling me that rescheduling may make it through the DEA in the next 90 days.
Oh, look at that. That is interesting.
Actually, he said, don't trade on it. There was no financial advice involved in this, and there is none now. But it is, just check out that interview. I mean, it was quite the drop.
I wonder if Dan has any insider information, right? And I don't mean that in the illicit way, but rather, you know, just being very active politically. Or if it's an assumption based on the recent news out of the DEA acknowledging cannabis and psychedelics research needs and seeking to increase production quotas for next year, right? They, as per use, that the DEA every year comes out with you know, this proposal of what they need for production quotas for cannabinoids and psychedelics to support clinical research and preclinical research. And they're looking for almost triple the amount of psilocybin grown for research, 200% increase in psilocin, which is another compound, almost tripling Delta 9 THC, 500% rise in ibogaine, other THC products, 2000% increase. The only one that remains unchanged is marijuana.
And here we are talking about what? Marijuana. We're talking about marijuana. But Javi, we're not going to take too long in the news today. That's incredibly interesting, man. But I do want to chat finance a little bit. So anything else you want to touch on regarding that?
Not really. You can go ahead.
With that, we have a couple of restructurings, man. Air Wellness. Yeah, had some great, a great update yesterday. And they are, looks like up on the day, a little bit of a rebound this morning, but again, up on the day. And also High Tide. Can you tell us about High Tide's restructuring? HITI on the NASDAQ.
So they are restructuring about $8.9 million of their outstanding debt held by a key industry lender. Under the terms of their restructuring, they had agreed to settle the outstanding structured installment payments. And I think this is positive for High Tide, right? At the very least. I think, you know, many of these companies need better conditions. A lot of the debt that different cannabis companies, acquired really wasn't under the best conditions, right? Mm-hmm. And as the market matures, we're getting closer and closer to what is a regular, normal, if you want, setup, right?
Right. Well, one would hope. I will say, though, like, the who was it we had on our podcast? Like 2 weeks ago, we had the Rainbow and MJ Reek guys on. The cost of capital mm-hmm. is high because the cost of it is high to them. Albeit, I've had other lenders tell me that it's high because of just straight demand. So I think it's a different story wherever you get that. Chadwick, what's up, man? Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're watching live, say what's up. LinkedIn, YouTube, I know is where most people watch us. We're also on X. If you're listening after the fact via podcast, we welcome you in. Thank you so much. With that being said, Javier, we have two amazing guests today. Any rapid mm-hmm. fire you want to get to before we jump into what our guests have to bring us?
Sure. Si, senor. Big news out of Argentina, my home country. Big shout out to 420 CBD Premium that completed the first export of cannabis beauty products in the country today. Benzinga exclusive. You heard it here first. Also, a very interesting article that you can find at benzinga.com/cannabis after this article. An increasing amount of cannabis workers are saying they're being tricked by alleged management-aligned or fake unions. Very interesting story. You can find at benzinga.com/cannabis after the show. Interesting earnings out of IIPR on the NYSE. And very promising results from CYBN, CYBN on the NYSE. Psilocybin, SLCybin analog for the treatment of major depressive disorder. This is a phase 2 study, very encouraging results. You can check it out at benzinga.com/cannabis. Last but not least, a new report shows that legalizing weed sparks a 41% jump in the value of homes in America.
Oh.
Benzinga.com/cannabis, again, after the show. Don't leave now.
There's more to that story. We got to get to that at some point. That's incredibly interesting. One story that I'll point out that caught my attention that I think everybody should go read was Trump's likely vice presidential running mate. What a heck of an article that was. Check that out. Benzinga.com/cannabis and what that person feels about the cannabis space. Oh, I'll give you a hint. It's positive. So
she's pretty darn conservative in her own words.
So. I wasn't even going to give a hint at it, but yeah, it's I know it's a great story. Phenomenal article. Well done, Javier and team. With that said, Malia, let's go ahead and bring over our first guest, Trees COO and president, Suresh Khanna. What's up, Suresh? Welcome in, sir. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. Of course. We're having fun. We're just talking about cannabis, you know, just.
I know. The way you opened that show, I was like, I got to bring the energy to this thing, man. I don't want to come on and be the. I'm wearing my fancy shirt today, but I don't want to be the suit in the room. So let me.
You look the
put
best
this on for the audience.
Well, I take that back. It's hard to look better than Javier, but all that said, Suresh, you're looking good today, my friend. Looking swell.
The Argentinians can't compete with that.
You know, man, so Trees, we've had John on before. We've had, you know, Trees represented on the show before. So I think, you know, we have a good grounding, but maybe just a quick like 30-second, 1-minute update from your perspective. What is Trees to the cannabis industry?
We are the beating heart of the retail operator. We run point of sale, payments, we connect into their e-commerce, their loyalty programs. We're the center of everything they're trying to do to be successful.
So you are POS and you connect into all these, but you are not all of those, correct? In terms of loyalty.
Today our core services are the point of sale system, right? In store, mm-hmm. which is where the majority of transactions still happen, obviously in retail. And we're a payments company, right? So we bring mm-hmm. integrated credit card, debit card, cashless ATM, whatever the industry needs, we plug it in, make sure it works, make sure that it's seamless, make sure the accounting is proper. Those are our core services. And then we connect in to a suite of partners. And at times we might build things, at times we might partner, but we're an open ecosystem for e-commerce, for loyalty, for various other solutions.
I am very interested in your analytics. But first, you said credit cards. Let's get into that.
I opened the door.
Yeah, can of worms. This is a deep rabbit hole we're going to go into. Are there credit card payments available for cannabis? The big debate.
I'd say it's closer to debit. Like, the lines get blurry when you go deep down into the guts of how this all works. It is it's blurry. But I'd say the core business we're in is debit. Debit had, as you know, like a big sort of nationwide shock to the system, I'd say, over the last month, that's hit everybody in the industry on the retail side. And so, yeah, it's there's innovation happening in payments. And so what does that look like in the new world? Gosh, it's a little confusing. Like, is it debit? Is it credit? Is it something else? I'd say at the end of the day, the thing that matters is it works for our retailers and it works for our consumers.
Thrive in the environment you're given. Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, and this is really what caught my attention the first time we had Trees on the show, was your market share. You all are massive in this space. Can you give us a quick update about, you know, really what portion of this industry do you control at the moment?
We started, our roots are with OG operators in California. And so, we were born out of Garden of Eden in the East Bay in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so we have a very strong presence in California. Upward, sort of around 40 cents of every dollar in California runs through Trees.
Wow.
It's an enormous market share there, but we're a nationwide player. It's a very, I think you might know, I'm sort of new to the industry. I'm 4 months in as the president here. So I consider myself still in a learning mode about the industry. It's complex, but one thing that's really obvious right out of the bat as a sort of an outsider is every state is different. Every local region is different. And so I think we have a very strong presence in Michigan, very strong presence in Missouri, Jersey, Massachusetts, Nevada, Arizona. These are the core markets we're playing in today, but you've got to be very thoughtful about what markets you enter, because it's sort of like being an airline. You're not going to compete on the Oakland to Spokane route unless you really do the work. You've got to have gates on both sides. You've got to have planes. You've got to have multiple flights a day so people have options. You've got to have maintenance crews. And what's the competition for that route? And there's a lot of that is similar for us in our part of the market in cannabis is, hey, if you're going to enter Michigan, you better be ready for it. You've got to build software that is 100% compliant. You got to have people on the ground. You got to answer the phones when customers have problems. You got to commit to it. And so we've been able to build that very thoughtfully and carefully. And I'm really proud of that because I think there's a lot of overselling in cannabis software. There's a lot of fly-by-night operators. I've seen a lot of just exaggeration selling vaporware. And I don't want that to be – that's not who Trees has been, and it's not who we're going to be either going forward. You've got to be a company of your word.
One follow-up there really quick. You set yourself up for these different markets geographically.
Yeah.
But when it comes to what you're building, is this something that as you enter new markets, are you going to stick to what you're doing in cannabis, or can you take this to other industries as well, to other parts of cannabis, other segments? I'm curious, like what's the growth property in what you're setting up right now?
There's one North Star for us, and that's it, which is we want to make retailers successful, specifically retailers. Like, I wake up every day and so does the company thinking about that one thing, and which for us is primarily how do you make them profitable? That is the core issue, right? And so anything that achieves that mission is in scope and we'll play in that market. We don't need to think about markets beyond that because that's a really big market just right there and it's really hard. So core focus number one, what market are we playing in, is be excellent at core point of sale. Like, that is where... That's the business we started in. It's the hardest to do, to get right. We've learned a lot of lessons the hard way over the years, and we're innovating like crazy there. We're not anywhere near done on that. So that means be 100% compliant in the markets we're in, be speedy, make it drop dead easy for bud tenders to do their job, make it easy for customers to buy what they need to do, right? So the second priority is then let's make sure payments happen, right? Cashless payments, digital payments are great for everybody. It's great for the consumer. It's great for the retailer, and so do everything related to that. And then the third priority is data. So Javier, you mentioned analytics. I mean, these are really hard jobs our customers have, our retailers. And so particularly for executives and store managers and inventory managers, how do you make it drop dead obvious what decisions they should make in their day? These are the markets we're playing in right now. I don't think we need to go any further past that. Like, that's a big market, and let's just make those people happy first.
Mm-hmm. You know, down the line of making, you know, retailers profitable, and working with data, I know you have a partnership with New Frontier Data to drive customer acquisition, right? In your experience in the space, what are the biggest challenges that these retailers face as it relates to customer acquisition, right? Because there's this myth, you know, weed sells itself, right? And people will walk into a dispensary, period, you know? And that is no longer the case, right? There are multiple dispensaries in an area that people are willing to drive. There's delivery. So, you know, what are the challenges and how do you address customer acquisition?
It's a great question. And I think, you know, it's a nascent industry, but it is starting to mature. And so, you know, with my outsider hat on, it's actually helpful because I've seen this story play out a million times in other industries. I was at Google for a number of years in the ads business. I've worked on e-commerce businesses. And what you're seeing is similar to what you see in other industries, which is there's like store issues, there are market issues, and there's federal issues. At the store level, there's either too much or too little product. Look, I don't consume that much. You know, I'm like very recreational, lightly recreational, let's call it. And I go into a lot more dispensaries than I ever did with this job. And it's a tough experience as an outsider. Like, if you're not like really into the culture and you don't know what's going on, it's overwhelming. So in some shops, there's not that many products out to look at. In other shops, it's overwhelming. I don't even know what all the categories are. My eyes glaze over. The bud tender might be high when I walk in. Like, are they just selling the top three products that they pitch to everybody? Or are they thinking about the experience I'm trying to have? It's pretty varied. So I think part of that is, so what is the implication of that? First, I think consumers, particularly maybe more recreational consumers, I think they're fickle when it comes to loyalty. There's a lot of BOGOs, there's a lot of discounts, it's all the same stuff, it's the same product everywhere. So as a retailer, you've got to figure out, how do I have an amazing consumer experience, whether it's in my store or online or through delivery, and make sure it's seamless? Is there a loyalty program? Do I have a great check-in experience? Is the bud tender dialed into what I might have bought last time? And the first conversation is not, what are you looking for today? But, hey, I see you bought this thing last time, this pre-roll. How was that? And like, it's a human conversation. And so all of those things are enabled by our software in a various different ways, right? At the end of the day, it's a human talking to a human, you know, in the in-store experience, but the software is a part of every step of that. From, does the bud tender know what I bought last time? Do they even know that I'm waiting in line and they greet me with my name? To, do we have the right products on the shelf? To, you know, you name it, right? Like, it's, and these are all issues related to customer acquisition and revenue. Because I think you're getting people trying things, customers trying things in retailer shops, but they're not sticking. And I think that's the core thing our customers are struggling with.
Mm, well said. One more question from me, and then I'll let Javi close us up. I'm curious, what is the healthiest market that you all are in right now, and why?
I'd say I just came back from a week in Michigan, and it felt like a really, really healthy ecosystem. I met almost everybody, you know, that are sort of larger players and a bunch of medium and smaller players. And what we see there is growing sophistication. We see an industry that's tightly knit and collaborating with each other and trying to help each other out. And, you know, it doesn't feel like they're overdeveloped. I think in certain markets in California, if you go drive around Central California, I get really nervous about some of our customers and some of the other dispensaries that might not be our customers, but you just check in on them. You're like, oof, I don't know if this shop's going to be here in a year. And there's a lot of stuff underneath that statement, right? But I got a very different sense in Michigan. The product is a lot cheaper, by the way, as well, than California. So there's a lot going on here, but I'd say probably Michigan.
You know, to close it up, from you're a newcomer to this space, right? So you have a different vantage point than many other people operating in the industry, right? If you could leave our audience with a message, right? You know, coming from other industries and getting immersed into cannabis, you know, what is this message for retailer success?
Oh man, that's such a good question. Okay, this is the thing. This is the main thing that is like the biggest thing for me is your point of sale and your payments. This software stack that you're using to run your business is unbelievably mission critical. It is the beating heart of your business. And what I'm seeing is I'm shocked to see CEOs and owners making decisions around their software tools that power their business based over $100 here, $200 there. They're making these very short term, like what's the cost on the label decision? And this might sound self-centered because I'm running a POS company, but it's not. Like it's a rational thing of like, really? Like you would change all of your hardware out and all the software that runs everything and all the analytics and the decision-making. You would do that to save a couple $100. And I understand that it's a tough time for many in the industry, but man, there's like many other places you should go cut costs if you're worried about that. It's not in your software because you need your vendor, people like us to be compliant. You got to build new features really fast. You've got to automate so that they can have less labor in their store. You got to have great analytics so your executives can sit there and make decisions. This is like, you can't get, that's not the thing to cut from. Like cut from a million other areas, but don't cut from that.
Well said. You know what? I lied. Last question here, Suresh. Do you have a favorite product in the cannabis space?
Oh man, I'm a noob, but I'm like,
it's okay.
I'm basically into sativa pre-rolls. I'm sort of brand
pre-roll man.
Agnostic. I'm a noob, like I said, and I just want the convenience. I also don't want too much in my house. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, I'll buy what I need for a night, have a great time. And it's mostly on getting the right experience. And I think that's, so to me, it's like less about the brand because I can't tell one thing from the other. And it's really about the budtender. It's like, can you help me have the experience I'm looking to have?
Well, that's a good budtender then. That's what they're there for, that type of consumer education. Suresh Khanna, president of Trees, thank you so much for being with us today. A really nice update for what you all are doing. We'll definitely keep up with you, man. But thanks again for your time.
Appreciate it. All right, take care.
See you soon. Javi, a great start to this episode, man. And he definitely had the best shirt on between the three of us. No offense. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's all
he looks good, man. He looks good. All right, we're going to keep it rolling here. Again, thank you all so much. We are in the middle of a couple of really, really solid executives in this industry. We just saw the president of Trees with Suresh Khanna. Next up, we have Tainia Rivers, the chief people officer of Curaleaf. Incredibly excited for this interview. Gonna be phenomenal. Malia, let's bring her on over. Welcome in, Tainia. I've been waiting for this for a long time. How are you?
I am doing great, Elliot. How are you?
We're doing good. You know, we're hanging out. We're talking to cool people in the industry. It's a fun gig we have here. Excited to kind of dive into what you do, though. Can you just give us a quick, you know, headline about, you know, what it is that you do for Curaleaf?
Absolutely. So my job is to help us become a great place to work. And what that means is I work with many executives across the company to establish a people first culture and really work hard to create a culture of engagement for our team members. Sounds really easy and simplistic at the roll of the tongue, but definitely not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, right? What kinds of policies from the mainstream are cannabis companies adopting in terms of human resources and employee satisfaction? Which ones do you think are missing and which ones are specific to the cannabis industry that you don't see elsewhere?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say what's missing. And I don't know if any needs to be specific for the cannabis industry. I think if you look at the core of what we're doing, just even in culture, is one, trying to really have a focus on DEIB. We've seen that we've recently added belonging to our strategy. But I think when you think about policies, I think it's more so important to better understand how do we make this a place where our employees can be themselves and not just focus on just corporate policies, but more so on culture and really trying to create a place where people want to come and work at every single day.
And, you know, I think there's an even deeper meaning to what you just said in the cannabis space, as opposed to just being a large business. And you know, we at Benzinga are, you know, an advocate of professionalizing without forgetting where this industry came from as much as anybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that in particular has to be incredibly difficult for a company as large as you are and for covering as many types of jobs as you do, being vertically integrated in these different markets.
Yeah.
Can you just chat a little bit about when it comes to hiring and how you all look at who you hire and bring in to work? Are these people that have been in the space? Are they new? Do you bring in geneticists that have been growing for a decade? I'm curious, what do you prioritize when it comes to legacy, when it comes to participation in the industry, you know, versus those who come and are new, such as Suresh, our previous guest?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. Of course, you get people who want to come to the industry who are really cannabis enthusiasts. They have a calling for cannabis. They use cannabis. It helps change their lives. Like, I can specifically speak to me. Like, let's use me for an example. I worked in many different industries, from Fortune 500 companies to financial institutions. Prior to coming here, I led HR for some sports teams. Probably a few of them you probably know: Philadelphia 76ers, New Jersey Devils. And nice. Although I'm someone who is experienced in my profession, I'm also someone who understands the power of the plant, for example. So I was, you know, years ago, before I was introduced to cannabis, I struggled big time with anxiety. I think sometimes people more than often struggle with anxiety and are afraid to speak about it. But I was someone where anxiety was just really disrupting my life, right? And that also created a host of other issues like insomnia. And once I was introduced to cannabis, it was something that really helped change my life. So when I had the opportunity and I found out about coming to cannabis, it was exciting. Not just because I got the opportunity to do what I love in this people and culture space, HR, but also because it's exciting. It's an industry where we're changing lives for, you know, for individuals that people may not know about it because of the stigma that comes with it. But it was exciting to get to be in this industry where it's really making a difference. So to answer your question, when you see people like, who are we hiring? Like, of course, we want to hire talented individuals to do the job. So step one, do they have the knowledge, skills, and ability to do the job that we're recruiting for? Great. But are they really tied into the mission of what we're trying to do? Can they really speak to and uphold our values that are important to us at Curaleaf? And more importantly, are they going to show up and live up to what we need them to be? So you'll see a lot of different people that we hire that comes from all different walks of life. But when people are passionate about the power of the plant, it makes it even more exciting.
You're muted.
Muted.
Mute button got him. It's still getting him. He's still muted.
This is all, so we will show some compassion.
All right, Javi, you can jump in a second. I'll go next. You chat? You know, it's been a tough year. Been a tough year and a half, right?
Yeah.
For the cannabis industry, and it's no secret, right? Yeah. You know, I think it's okay to chat somewhat openly about those challenges, but I think from your perspective, you know, being someone who you know has an HR, a very prevalent HR part and aspect of the space, how do you keep company morale high and company culture at as much of a premium as possible right now, you know, as we hopefully look to a brighter year next year?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Elliot, because sometimes it's hard to talk about the difficult things. And it doesn't take a rocket science for those of us to know that, yeah, it's been a really tough year. But I think what you have to do is you have to continue to have a focus on employee engagement. And that's a challenge, because there are times where people may lose jobs for they're used to seeing people that work next to them every single day. And, you know, the first question is, well, how do you do that? Right. I think first and foremost, you have to provide a platform where employees, they need to be heard. They need to know that you care. and they need to share their thoughts, their ideas. So that's one of the things that we've done. Like when I think about our DEIB spaces where we allow this platform for employees to share and kind of be the support group for one another. Another thing that you have to do is when you think about how important the role of a leader is, like, think, you know, those are the folks that are working in alongside our team members, where the threshold of our team members work in facilities and stores, and they're working alongside of them. And they need to know how to engage with those team members. They need to know that, you know, people bring their whole selves to work. And not only are they dealing with the stresses that may come along with just the day to day, they also, you know, are dealing with what they see that's happening within our industry. So, you know, one of the focuses that we have is how do we continue to create a learning and development program for our leaders to really teach them how to our team members and really help them be able to understand that these are human beings and you have to get to know who they are, but yet listen to them and see how we can continue to help them grow and develop within the company.
You know, that's amazing. Thank you. That's a great answer. I think something, you know, and we've had several people from Curaleaf on this show over the years. One person that sticks out particularly for this conversation is, I don't think she's with Curaleaf anymore. She went and started Marijuana Matters, Khadijah Tribble. And she's a great friend of ours. Love Khadijah to death.
Yeah, she's great.
You know, and she, when she was on a couple years ago now, she mentioned, that there's like a leadership development, program where, you know, you, I think you have, you know, women and people of minorities, that you develop into leaders in management. Is that still something you're active in and still something you all?
We are. Yep. Okay. And it's something that we're building upon as well. Like we recently rolled out what we call our SEED program. It's looking at our high potentials and providing a program to develop them. So that way they can have a future with us and continue to build on their skill set. So we may have some, let's say early, you know, we think folks who are early on in their career, and they're a little bit unsure about what they want to do, but you can tell that these are rock stars. They're making a difference in their jobs. Like, how do we continue to develop them for what's next and help them be able to see some career trajectory within their role? So we kind of rolled out this HIPO program now where we're looking at the top 25 individuals within a company and be able to continue to grow them into, you know, managerial positions and continue that development throughout the course of their career. So it's exciting and, you know, it's important. And we have to continue to have a focus on not just for those HIPOs, but just across the company is developing our team members. So super important. And I'm glad that you remembered that, Elliot.
Oh, of course. of course. We try and make sure all opinions are, it's all a journey, right? We're all on this cannabis journey together. Yeah. You know, taking that to more of a regional centric discussion, do you see it more difficult to recruit for cannabis and or have your employees recruited for the industry in certain markets more so than others?
I think definitely you do see some difficulty. And I think sometimes, especially for maybe individuals, because look, the best talent is you have to kind of create that pipeline, right? And kind of go after those individuals who aren't looking for jobs. And I think sometimes the struggle is, or the challenge I should say, is getting those A players and maybe working for other industries and introduce them to cannabis. So they're a little uneasy because they don't really know about the cannabis industry. It's although, you know, for those of us who've been doing it for a while, you feel like it's, you know, it's an industry that has been that people should know about, but there's still some, I would say a little uneasy on the other side because people just don't know enough about the industry or the future of the industry, right? Like they hear a lot of things that are happening that they're not sure it's an industry that will continue to grow. So I think that's the challenge. And rather be a specific region or a specific market, I think the challenge is continue. How do we really work to get people to know about our industry, to educate those who may be misinformed so that they can know this is a great place to be and our industry will continue to grow, but we need to be able to help others be able to understand that.
Yeah. I have one more question. And then for the love of God, Javier is back on. We got to let him talk.
StreamYard is down in Argentina, so I'm using a VPN. I hope you can hear me. Does it work?
We can hear you. You sound great. Your dulcet tones are amazing. Yeah. I just have one follow-up.
Argentina with you, Javier. I would love to just come there and do the interview. Why are you guys in Argentina? Go to Argentina?
I see Javier like twice a year. I miss that beautiful man. So, Tainia, one more question for me, and then Javier, you can ask a couple to close it up. Okay. You know, you talk about introducing cannabis to talent, yeah. Right? And there's a big, there's not a big debate, but it's something that we actually see a decent through line with our interviews here and how people respond to them in these different chats is consumption for these executives. Many feel that these executives should understand what their product actually is, the quality of it, et cetera. Whereas Javier, he'll go ahead and completely disagree with that and thinks that it's not necessary. I'm curious, where does Curaleaf have a stance on that? Is it if you consume, great, if you don't, it's your personal choice? What do you think is maybe the trend of executives that consume?
I would think it's, you know, for us, it's definitely is your personal choice, but us, we celebrate it, right, across our organization. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. It was actually a topic I was talking to my boyfriend about. Timing is perfect. I wish he was right here. So we literally had a debate about it because I am upfront about it. Like literally I told him that we would get married. We're going to have like a little smoking station in the back where there's like pre-rolls and people can like grab a joint and they can smoke right there. And he was like, he is what I call, he has his own business. He's a barber and I call him a closet smoker, like, or a closet cannabis user, because he does not want people to know about who he is. And for me, it's something that I'm proud about as an executive. And I speak very, it's something that I kind of wear as a badge on my chest that I am a cannabis user, because, you know, I talked about at the beginning how I believe in the power of the plant. And I think more organizations need to do a better job of how do we ensure that not only people know about it, but that we share our own personal stories. And that is where I see, like, we don't have a lot of organizations doing that. Like, how many executives do you see raising their hand to say, like, yes, I'm a cannabis user, I'm proud of it, and I don't mind sharing it out. So it's funny, Ellie, that you asked a question, because I literally was just in this heated debate yesterday about it, because he's like, you're an executive, you should, you know, like, why do your parents know, like, other people understand, and you're talking about it during interviews and you're putting it on LinkedIn. I say, yeah, because I'm proud. And how can I not work for an industry, be a leader and an executive in this industry, but be afraid to talk about cannabis? Like, that to me is so contradictory. And I'm glad that we're talking about it today. Mm. Yeah.
I live for these kinds of debates. I know you touched on diversity a little bit, but I have a question that will ruffle some feathers.
Oh boy.
And it's a tough question for you.
Okay.
So there's this big debate, right? Of diversity in hiring, right? I am one for advocating for diversity in hiring. And sometimes that means doing extra work, right? Spending extra time, looking for diverse candidates. In Argentina, for instance, we have a thing called the transgender quota, where, for instance, government agencies need to have at least, I think it's 5% of their staff self-identifying as trans, right? And then a lot of people go like, no, you got to hire the best person for the job. You know, why would you hire a subpar candidate, right? And the thing is that, to me, perpetuates inequality, right? There is a perfect candidate for that job that also fits diversity criteria. It might take a little bit of extra time to find them, like we do at Benzinga, to find many times like female executives and C-suites for every panel on our conferences. It takes extra work. But like, where do you stand in this debate? Is diversity something that we need to actively push and sometimes do that like extra, go that extra mile, or is it just the best person for the job?
I can tell you right now, that I believe wholeheartedly that you have to be intentional. And if it means you have to slow down to get more diverse candidates, then that's exactly what it is that you have to do. And I'll be quick, but I want to share a quick story with you because this is something that is near and dear to my heart. So, you know, I won't call out the organization, but I'll just say early on in my career, I worked for companies where I did not see a lot of people who looked like me. Okay. And I like to do all types of fun things with my hair, for example. So now you see that I have locks in my hair, right? And when I worked for this company, I was wearing braids at the time. I'll never forget it. And I was tapped on the shoulder and I was asked to not wear my hair braided anymore. I was asked to wear my hair straight. And I never forget that day, even though it was many years ago, but I'll never forget that. In fact, right after that conversation, I went into the restroom and I cried and bawled my eyes out. And that was not the first time that I did that. It was just one of yet another time that, because I felt like, one, I did not fit in. Two, I didn't see a lot of people like me of color, and there was not a lot of diversity within the company. So for me, I just think it's something that it just needs to happen. And of course, you want to find the best qualified candidate. Like, of course, that's the overarching goal, but you still have to be very intentional to make sure that you are recruiting talent from all different walks of life, inclusive of gender, ethnicity, making sure that you have members of the LGBTQIA community as well, those with disabilities, like, and it goes on. Like, you have to very much be intentional because people need to see that, and organizations need to provide a culture where people can be their most authentic selves. And that is something that's important. And if it means you got to slow down and wait another couple weeks to get the right person, you have to do it because it's very important to be intentional.
You know, and
it's just, it's really
because both of us completely agree with you. I think what a shocking story.
It's generational,
but not shocking at the same time.
It is a little bit generational, right? Charlamagne was discussing this topic on the Daily Show I was watching today in the morning, right? Some sportscaster, I don't know which sport or which caster, but he used the R word the other day, and Charlamagne was kind of joking, like, you know, re-educating people, and it's tough, but it's like, again, it's something that requires work, right? Many times the upper C-suites in many companies, you know, grew up in a different era where none of this was a requirement, right? And they don't fully understand it, right? And that takes courage to go up to your boss, to your manager, mm-hmm. and say, dude, get with the times.
Oh, yeah. I recall times where, you know, if I've seen candidates and I have not seen a good amount of diverse candidates that I may be involved in the interview process, and I'm interviewing candidates for a particular role, I'll call it out and say, like, we need more diverse candidates. I have not seen enough. And I think more professionals need to do that. Like, don't be afraid to speak up to say that we need to see more diverse candidates for this particular role, because they mm-hmm. do exist. And maybe you have to be more creative to find them if they don't know about you, but be creative and get out there and find them, because they're out there.
Yeah, I think it's, you don't necessarily, I would imagine, you don't want to put a quantitative number exactly. on diversity, right? You don't want to just say, oh, I met my quota.
That doesn't feel good.
No, yeah, it's not what it should be about. Right. It doesn't at all. And, you know, I think with that, though, part of this best candidate argument, because I have a lot of family members that feel a certain way, as we all do, I would imagine, about just hire the best candidate, regardless of race. You know, but with that, like, there's got to be a lot of best candidates, right? That are from different backgrounds and different ethnicities, different religions. And that, I think, is potentially what's lost in translation. And I really, my question here is that accurate? Am I correct in my thinking there? Or is there really just a best candidate out there?
I mean, well, it depends on how you define best candidate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to get lost in words, because the best candidate can mean a different definition depending on the person. Mm-hmm. I think the goal is, how do you find the right candidate that's best for the job? And I think that's how I would look at it, right? So, of course, you want to focus on how we want to have diverse candidates as well, but you know, have the people, there are some people too who can learn how to do a job, then maybe they don't need, you know, I think sometimes we get so hyper-focused. Oh, I want a person that has a gazillion years of experience. Is that there are some people who can, you can train them to do the job. So I think that, look, for those of us who are in talent acquisition, we have to make sure that we're doing a better job of asking the right questions. And not only that, is better understanding what the role calls for, because I can tell you that I've seen positions before that ask for certain things that the role particularly didn't need. And you may be rolling out some really good people with this false expectation that you need to have so many different, skill sets for the job that may not exist. So of course, there's the core of what you need to do the job. But I also think you need to kind of like take a step back and really better understand like what are the core things you need to do the job, but also how can we be creative where perhaps this candidate may not have a skill set, but they may have something else to bring to the table. So I don't like to say just the best candidate, because what does that really mean? I think it depends on what the role is and the experience of that person.
Yeah. We have a saying down here, and it's like the optimal is an enemy of what's excellent, right? Many times in that pursuit of what we conceived as optimal, right? There might be several excellent candidates that will bring different skill sets and that will make the role great for one or another reason, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes we're so dead set on these definitions of what is the optimal.
Definitions. That's the right word. I think that's what I was looking for too. Because we're so set on those definitions that we're not willing to be, we're so inflexible. And that's where it requires maybe a little bit more flexibility, because we want to, again, our goal is to want someone to do the job, but think about what they may be able to bring to the table that you may not have considered within those definitions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, it's always educational for me to understand how to create a good environment. It's not an easy job, especially in an industry that is nascent and burgeoning. We appreciate your expertise, your being with us today and being so candid. It's really been really nice to catch up.
Oh, wait, before I go, we didn't do the shirt thing. Who has the better shirt? Is it me, Javier, or you?
You by far. It's not even a question. You know, even Suresh, I think, would say you by far. Okay. Dania, thank you so much for being with us today. I love to catch up down the road and continue this conversation. It's incredibly important. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you for your thanks for having me. And you guys have a great day. Appreciate
you as well. Talk soon.
See ya. Bye.
Javi, we lost you for a minute and we lost him again. It's just me. Nope. No, he's back. He's
that's
back.
Why they call me Slim Shady.
Will the real Javier Haas please stand up? We've had three of them today. Thank you to Tynia Rivers, to Suresh Khanna, Kira Leaf, and Trees, respectively. Nicole Majo, happy to be a part of this. Thank you for joining us. Thanks, Tiny Pie. Thanks, Mitch, for jumping in. Thanks, Chadwick. Appreciate everybody jumping in. A really, really great episode. I think getting different perspectives, newer, and those who are entrenched in the space. Appreciate everybody. Javier, last words to you, my brother from another mother.
No last words. Thank you, Elliot. I love hosting this with you. And looking forward to what's in store for next year. Stay tuned. We have a very interesting interview on site. As Elliot was saying, we shot in Argentina yesterday with the team at Athena Nutrients, which is a spinoff of the Jungle Boys. And we'll be posting that on our channel very shortly. So go to YouTube and follow Benzinga Cannabis, which is a separate channel from Benzinga, because we're that unique. We're that special.
Yeah, we're that cool.
We've got Mr. Elliot Lane, our national man of mystery.
And Mr. Javier Haas, the international man of mystery. Benzinga, Phoebe, Guap, Nicole, everybody else, have a phenomenal rest of your week. We'll see you again on Tuesday. Till then, peace. We'll be right back.